Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Let's Grill Jeannie call. We have Jermaine and myself on the line, and it's Jeff Lindahl's birthday. I'm not sure if he's going to join us.
Hi, Jeannie. It's Jermaine.
Hey, Jermaine. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. How is it outside? I saw you just came in.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's not you know, it's not as hot as it was the last couple of days, Jeannie, but it's you know, it's, as long as it's not raining around here or snowing, that's the only thing we care about.
There we go. Okay, so we're ready to begin the Let's Grill Jeannie call. I want to mention a few points before we get into questions. We want to welcome all the new Mastery students from Philadelphia, PA. Reminder, for new students and any student who has not filled out the student data form, please return it so we can get you assigned a coach. That's how we pick your coaches for you. Here's a reminder, UP9 is July 28th, 29th, and 30th. Don't forget to send in your confirmation forms if you have not already done so. And if you haven't signed up, why not? It's going to be a fantastic event. This is going to be like the best one of them all, and I wouldn't want to see you miss it. So give Jermaine or myself a call, and we'll get you registered, signed up. If you don't have your forms, we'll get those sent out as well. We have a couple of high fives today. High five to Greg Stargell. He's from Huntsville, Alabama. He owns 77 units in 5 different markets, including Huntsville, Alabama. Got the properties through broker relationships, looking to do bigger deals in the 100-plus range. There you go, Greg. I also have a high five for Dave Staten and his son. They live in Ohio, and they own 4 different multifamily properties, a 40, a 22, a 14, and a 12. And they're looking to get over 100 units in Ohio, so they're actively looking. Okay, are there any questions, operator? If you wanted to ask,
we have no questions.
Press zero. Okay. Can you tell them that, operator? Thank you.
Yes, just as a friendly reminder, if you would like to ask a question, press star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
Okay, so I have a question from Paul Hintermeyer. He's from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And he says, okay, I am looking to submit an LOI. What is the timeline of events? How soon would I need to go to the property and tour it? The answer is after the LOI is accepted. How soon would I need to get the SEC attorney to start collecting money? After the due diligence phase and you decide you're going to purchase the property, how soon would I need an attorney in that state to write the purchase agreement? Well, the listing broker can write the purchase and sale agreement. You might want to reach out to an attorney and just introduce yourself, because you're going to need him to review all the particulars. And if you tell me where the property is, I might be able to recommend somebody. But if not, just look through and see what the history is on the people. Google them. Google's an amazing tool, and you can get a lot of information in that. And it doesn't really have to be in that state. It can be in other states, too, as long as they are universal. Anything you want to add to that, Jermaine?
Or if you belong to a RIA club, you can ask them if they have anybody who recommends an attorney or if they recommend one in your area. So that's another good way to find one.
There you go. Okay, I have another question. It's from Roy LaFontaine from Pennsylvania. Been active in the mentoring program for about 5 weeks, seriously looking to do 50 to 150 unit properties in 3 of the markets in Florida that Dave identified in his merge market list. could you give me an idea as to what factors went into choosing these particular markets? Do I still need to do all the background research that is outlined on the emerging market checklist? Or can some of the items be bypassed if some of this work has already been done by Dave's research staff? Well, you can use Dave's list because it's pretty current. But if you really want to know about specific areas, I would phone the Economic Development Committee and ask them what new jobs are coming into the marketplace and what are the plans to revitalize downtown areas. If you don't have an Economic Development Committee, then you do have a Chamber of Commerce. One or the other is fine. But that's how you really hone in on a certain market. Anything you want to add, Jermaine?
Or if you wanted to, is this Roy? One of the ways, if you want to just double check Dave's list, and you don't really have to, but if you wanted to, you can go to milkeninstitute.org. And they give a list of the small and big cities and towns. And what they'll do is they'll actually categorize them and number them to tell you what's the best one. They'll give you the job growth in that area, you know, the population. So you'll get a full idea of what's going on in that particular market. So it's a good tool to use if you're looking to research a property or research an area.
Okay, thank you, Jermaine. Any questions, operator?
Yes, we actually have a few. Our first question comes from William. William, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. This is William.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to ask, you have an 8-unit complex under contract, and it's on a main thoroughfare, 2 lots down from a gas station. Would you recommend doing an environmental one on that property?
Well, you might want to find out if one's already been done. And if one has not been done, then your lender probably will require you to do it.
So the lender I'm working with now is not requiring that. But I'm having, obviously, an inspection done, and they do a basic environmental testing as part of that package. But wanted to just get your opinion on whether you would have that done or not.
Yeah, I would do it. A gas
station,
I mean, there's all kinds of leakage into the soil, and you just never know.
Better be
safe than sorry. It might cost you a few pennies now, but later on, it could cost a lot more.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, up next we have Joe. Joe, please go ahead.
Hello, guys. This is Joe from Cherry Hill. How are you?
We're good. How are you, Joe?
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Just fine. I'm looking at an 80-unit building at the moment, and I just discovered that the building has aluminum wiring. Now, I know this has been covered in a couple of my classes, but at the moment I can't find my notes on it. Could you go over the aspects of that aluminum wiring?
I am not aware of the I know there's problems with aluminum wiring, but I think that's going to be up to your lender as well. Will they lend on properties with aluminum wiring, or will they need to be covered? I really don't know. Jeff Lindahl's the expert on that. Jermaine, do you remember that answer he gave a few weeks ago?
Not really. Have you done an inspection, Joe?
No, not yet.
Anything? Oh, okay. Yeah, they'll let you know about that in your inspection. So.
Okay. Yeah, I was just. I know Dave touched on it a few weeks ago, and. Like I said, I can't find my notes. I didn't know whether it was something we should totally stay away from or there's a way to work around it.
Well, you know what? If Dave touched on it 2 weeks ago, go up to the Mastery website and pull down that call and re-listen to it. I should have been listening that week. I must have been doing something because I really don't know the answer too well.
Okay, I'll check into it, and I'll go back over my notes and see if I can find it.
Okay, and you might want to just reach out to Jeff. It's jlindahl@rementor.com, and just ask him the question. He'll pop on and give you the answer.
Okay, very good. Thank you much.
Okay, sure.
Bye-bye.
Okay, up next we have Tom. Tom, please go ahead.
Jeannie, this is Tom from California. How are you?
I'm excellent, thanks. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing pretty good. I'll see you at UP9 in a few weeks.
Excellent.
I have a quick question, Jeannie. I'm working with a number of realtors in Oklahoma City, and what is your take on Oklahoma City?
Well, it's interesting because somebody else just wrote to me about that, and I'll answer that question too. Dave says it's very good in Oklahoma City, especially the northwest side. Tulsa is also on Dave's top 10 list. The only reservation I have for Oklahoma itself is there's so many hurricanes there, it would scare me. But Dave says that Oklahoma City is good.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too.
Okay. Up next, we have Cynthia. Cynthia, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Jermaine. This is Cynthia with Center Management. How are you all?
Good, excellent. Cynthia. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm calling you all from Fort Worth, Texas. And my question is, we've been out doing some networking with some of the meetups in the area, and we're hearing that when you submit an LOI, because you know how competitive this area is, and we're trying to go out to the submarket, but even those are pretty competitive right now. So we're hearing with the LOIs, in order to be competitive, we need to include a hard money offer, which they're saying isn't refundable based on contingencies, versus the earnest offer, which our understanding is refundable based on certain contingencies. So can you all talk about the difference between a hard money offer in your LOI versus earnest money to be considered for these properties?
Earnest money is a 1% of the purchase price. That's to get the property off the market so nobody else is bidding on it. Hard,
okay.
That means it's not hard money. It's your money goes hard day one. I wouldn't even consider buying that because there's no way to get that back. So if there's any hiccups at all, I mean, you're stuck. So I wouldn't, I mean, the property would have to be something I was emotionally attached to and I couldn't live without before I put hard money down first.
Okay.
So it's not a hard money lender. It's
right,
your
no.
money goes hard day one. That means it's
okay.
Refundable.
And they're saying even with contingencies, hard money is not refundable, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
So they get to keep your money, Cynthia. So if you, for whatever reason,
yeah, it doesn't pass,
it doesn't
whatever.
Go through, they keep your money, so.
Okay,
me,
well,
that to me is
slimy.
No way.
Yeah, and that's what we're hearing to be, you know, best and last, you know, best and final, you've got to do some of this. Now, that's through some networking situations. I don't know if that's necessarily the majority of the situations down here or if that's for the bigger groups that are trying to come in and buy. So I will stay with earnest money and not go the hard money route.
Yep, I would too.
Great. Super. Thanks, guys. We'll see you all in Boston next month.
Sure thing, Cynthia.
See you later,
right, bye-bye.
Cynthia.
Bye.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, I have, Gigi, that was your answer on Oklahoma City and also Pelser is on Dave's list. That was your question that I answered. I have a bunch more questions, so let's start. So when working out the spreadsheet, we're targeting 12% cash on cash, but it doesn't always work out, even with 8 cap and good debt coverage ratio. How low a cash-on-cash return can we still consider before simply passing on the property as not making sense for the investors? This question came from Jeannie Parson. Well, to me, 12% is the lowest, because any lower than that, you're cutting into your portion of the share. So 12% is, to me, the lowest you can go. I like to buy when it's 14 or 15. So in order to get that, you're going to have to lower the price to get the cash on cash to go up, or lower your acquisition fee. If you're targeting 4 or 5%, go down to 3 or 2, and that will change the cash on cash sum. Her next question is, how do you allocate funds for future renovations if all the units are occupied and the update is only necessary as tenants move out? Do you still plug funds in for closing costs other for those expenses, or use the number in the CapEx fund on the spreadsheet? Well, for me, all I can say is if you have nothing in CapEx other and the bank holds back the CapEx, how will you get the work done? So I always like to put some figure equal to the CapEx that you're reserving in CapEx other, so I have cash flow so that we can do the repairs. Because how this works is, you go out, you get a contractor to do the work, you pay the contractor, then you submit the bills to the bank on a quarterly basis, and they release the funds after coming out and inspecting it. But if you don't have the money to do the work, then you're going to have to get, you know, use your own money or get somebody to lend you the money as a promissory note, which is going to prohibit you from paying your investors any kind of cash flow until you get the reimbursement done from the bank. So I say make sure you have CapEx other money in there. And the next question is, what is the best way to find an attorney for your property? Do you get a referral from the broker or use a national attorney or someone close to you that you know for everything? I like the person that you know, because they know about you, they know that you've vetted them out. But if you don't have anybody close to you where you're buying, then go online, check out some of the reviews that you see, or go to your RIA club and find out who they're using. And that's my take. Jermaine, you got anything you want to add?
Sorry about that, Jeannie. I'm answering people's emails. Nope, I think you hit it, the nail right on the head. So,
okay.
I do want to say something for, I think it was Joe in New Jersey who was looking for that call. If you're still listening, the call was actually February 21st. It is right on the Mastery website. Dave talks about aluminum wiring versus copper wiring and what to do, and so you want to go to the Mastery website, recent calls, and it's the Mastery Teach call on February 21st, 2017. So
thank you, Jermaine.
You're welcome.
Awesome. Maybe you want to pull that off so I can listen to it and learn too.
I will do that.
So here's a question from Brianna Halverson from Savannah, Georgia. Hope your week is off to a great start. A lot of the properties we're looking at in a coastal market are looking like we'd have to lowball pretty hard in order to make the deal. Should we keep focusing on this market? Well, what you need is a motivated seller. So you could go to a different market, or you could try sending a mailing out and looking for motivated sellers in those areas. And it might not be as competitive because they have different reasons for wanting to sell. Those are my two takes on that. Also, can Jeannie share the emerging market list with me? And I already sent this over to you, Brianna. early this morning. Okay. Any questions, operator?
Yes. Up next, we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie and Jermaine. It's Mark from Tampa. How are you today?
I'm fine, Mark. How are you?
Good. Very good. Question for you. I'm in process with a property down here. Have enough for the raise, but one of the lender's criteria is that I have 10% liquid cash available after closing, in order for, you know, if repairs come along or something like that. So first question is this common? And then secondly, do you have any clever ideas where I could just, they just need to see the cash in an account for 2 months. So I essentially need $100K for about 2 months. Any clever ideas for me to find cash like that in an unsecured note of some sort?
I would, if you have an LLC created, I would do a promissory note with somebody, pay them 10% interest on their money for the first 2 months, and then give it back to them.
Okay, that's a good solution. And then, so I'd need to still find some kind of private investor to do that,
yep.
Right?
Yep, somebody that okay. just wants to make 10% on their money. And it's secure. It's going to be sitting in the bank.
Right.
That's why the banks are all requiring sponsors, because they want them to have up to 6 months liquidity of mortgage payments in the bank. That's why they require a sponsor. Even though it's all non-recourse loans, they still want to have somebody with money in case there's a hiccup.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Jeannie. That's a good suggestion. I'll pursue that. And hopefully by UP9, I'll be able to tell you that the property is a done deal.
And we'll be high-fiving you, Mark.
That's right. That's right. Sounds great, guys.
That's
thanks for
awesome.
The help today.
Sure thing.
Okay. Up next, we have Tomas. Tomas, please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. My name is Pramod, and I'm from Chicago. How are you doing?
Good.
Good.
All right. Thank you. So I have a question. I was on the boot-on-the-ground training last Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Chicago. And one question I was not very clear on when I am doing this elevator pitch with any investor, I am just, you know, telling that, you know, I'll be able to provide a return on your investment around 16%, 8% quarterly, and the rest 8% on the equity on the property, right? So, but that 8% equity on the property, I'm not very clear on how I will be able to provide if the property doesn't sell.
Wait, you're getting this confused. So what you're committing to them is they will get an 8% return on their money annually. So
right.
Say they put up $100,000, you're going to pay them $2,000 a month for 4 months. It's 8% mm-hmm. minimum. So they get a preferred rate of return before you take money. And then from yes. what you buy it for, to what you sell it for, you minus out the debt service, you minus out whatever you owe all the investors left on their principal, and then there's a pot left over, and they're going to get a return equal to 20% annualized return based on that pot. So if you have the property for, say, 4 years, and you start out at 8%, you up the rents, and now you can go to 9%, and then 10%, and then end up with 11. So you're going to add up all those numbers, and you're going to get a figure of, say, 40. And then from what you buy it for to what you sell it for, you're going to get 50% of that pie. And so you're going to add the 90. It's going to be 90 divided by 4. So they're getting like a 22% return annualized on their funds. Do you understand that?
Kind of, yeah. So that's
well,
that's what I was.
Well, it's all coming out of the rents that people are paying.
Right.
It's not coming from you. It's coming from the property.
Yes.
From the
yes.
investment.
Correct. Yeah, correct. So basically, I'm saying that, you know, let's say I have bought this property for $1 million, you know, and after 4 years, I'm selling this property for $1.2 million. So the 200 equity is built on that property, right? Based on the rent increase or whatever.
After 4 years, you only made $200,000 more. That's not a good figure. If you buy a property for $1 million, you should be able to sell it for like $1.4 million or $1.5 million in 4 years.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So now you're going to pay off the debt on the property. So you probably have a mortgage on the property equal to, you know, $800,000 to start. And
correct.
You'll pay down maybe $100,000 off of that throughout the 4 years. So now
right.
you have to pay back $700,000. You have to pay back the brokerage fee
investors.
Or the lender fee,
mm-hmm.
which is 3%. And then you pay back all the investor money that you've raised, which is probably $200,000 or $300,000. And
right.
now you've got a pot that's maybe $500,000. So
it won't be 5,000, right? It won't be 5,000.
500,000.
Yeah, I mean, 500,000. It'll be probably less than that. It'll be because I'm going to pay the closing. I'm going to pay all the investors and everything. So it'll be, let's say, 1.1 mil. So maybe 400 to 300, K is what the total gain after you know paying all the investors and paying the mortgage and everything else closing, right? So on that 300 capital gain is what I'm going to pay 8% or 10% more to my investors.
No, you're going to give them half of that, and you're going to keep half of it. So on $150,000 that's left over, you're not paying them any interest. You're giving them that return as profit. That's
okay.
their profit. You're not paying interest on that. It's the profit
okay.
on the property.
Okay.
What's your email address? And I will send you a property so you can look at it, because I think you're a visual person.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. My email is P as in Peter, AKS.SANNancy@gmail.com. And I would really appreciate if you can just send me that. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, up next we have Alice. Alice, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie and Jermaine. It's Alice down in Virginia, previously New York.
How are you, Alice Cummings, happening to a red girl.
yes, exactly. No more soup, so I'm doing well with real estate.
I see you a lot on Facebook and popping up. You're going everywhere.
Yes, I'm doing the best I can.
Having the time of your life.
All kudos
awesome.
To you guys. Yes. So I'm excited to be talking to you again. And I'm looking forward to UP9. I'll be there next month. So very excited for it.
Yeah. Are you coming with Bill and Chuck and Dan?
Yep. So that's part of the reason I'm jumping on today is because of all the success that you guys have helped us with. We're closing on our first 200-plus deal. So it's 211 units. We're actually closing today. So very excited about it. And wanted to say thank you guys. In Georgia. It's just in Warner Robins, Georgia, so south of Atlanta.
So is this one of the ones I asked Dan to sponsor for somebody?
It came from a guy named Steve Hiddle, who also was in the program. He came to UPA. He is a developer. He wasn't comfortable with multifamily investments. You might have put the two of them together, though. And I think you actually did. Yeah. So kudos to you guys on all of that. And part of the reason I'm getting on the call is part of it's a question, part of it's a little bit of a pitch. But we have, you know, this we're closing today, and we are $200,000 shy of our target raise, which I'm sure has happened to other people before. So one thing I wanted to see was, A, if you had any, you know, advice or anything like that as far as trying to keep that from happening again. But we wanted to also see maybe if there's anybody on the call listening that, you know, wants to take the opportunity to invest in a great property and a really well put together deal and kind of learn how that goes before maybe going to UP9 and having an investment that's a really good deal in a 200-plus unit property in the nice southeast market. So do you have any suggestions maybe as to other ways that we could try to go about?
You could give them your phone number, Alice, and if anybody's interested in the Virginia area, they're to call you up.
And your email, too.
Yep. All right, guys, if anyone is interested, I can't go through specifics now, but we can chat and figure all that out. But for a 211-unit property, which is in Warner Robins, Georgia, with a really short-term, quick-return style, pretty investment value-add play. If you're just signing up for the Mastery Program, it's a really awesome program. It is a year, and it's really helped us to jump from, for me to get into some of these big deals, but then also to jump with the team into a larger deal and really become successful at this real estate game. So thank you.
And you do have a great team, and it was a smart move for you to go back home came from in Richmond and join up with these guys. I refer a lot of people to you. Do you get their numbers?
Yeah, we do. And I tell you, this program is tremendous. So it's helped us get everywhere we are today. So all of us have been through it. Bo and Chuck and Dino and myself now. So
that's awesome. Thank you, Alice.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
Congratulations, Alice. We're going to be I'm going to send you an email with my information because we want a testimonial from you guys. You're going to get an email from us, and we want to give you a high five once it closes, all right?
Good deal. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you,
okay.
Alice.
Bye, Alice.
Making dreams come true, Jeannie.
I guess. Anybody else operator?
Okay. Yes. Up next we have Lexley. Lexley, please go ahead.
Hello, Jeannie and Jerome. This is Lexley in Houston.
How are you?
Okay, I have a question here. Yesterday I got a listing to my broker, one of our brokers here, and the property, the seller says there is an assumption on the on the loan. It can be assumable. I did some time ago, I thought Jeff had mentioned or Dave, there are some pitfalls with assumption. What should I be looking out for?
Well, number one, with an assumption, it can be a great thing for you because if the seller doesn't have you assume the loan, then they're going to have a huge prepayment penalty. So they're more apt to be lenient with some of your requests because they got to have it. The other thing as a pitfall could be that there's only a short window of time on the loan. So say it's a 3-year time frame and say you wanted to keep it for a minimum of 5, then you're going to have to get a new loan after the 3 years.
Okay.
So you could be assuming a loan that has maybe 10 years left on it and it's got a 3.5% mortgage. You want to make sure that it's assumable again so that in 5 years' time when you're ready to sell it, that you can have somebody assume your loan or you'll be facing a prepayment penalty.
Okay.
So those are the pitfalls, but I think the big thing with assumptions is the time it takes to close. because they have to vet you out. They got to vet the property out. Then they got to vet the management company out. They have to go through all the paperwork. And by the time they print everything, it could take 6 months to get it closed. So your investors' money will be sitting in a bank account waiting for it to be closed. And it's time consuming. But it could be a fantastic thing, too, if you're getting it at a percentage or two below what the current rate is. It could be really a good deal.
This one is listed at 3.5%.
That's excellent. That's excellent.
But there is a transfer fee, or there's a fee of 1%.
It's a one-point loan assumption fee.
It's a 1% fee. Okay, so that's standard. Okay.
That's very standard.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good luck to you. I hope things work out well.
All right. See you at UPN. See you at UPN. All right.
Okay. See you then.
Okay. Up next, we have Chris. Chris, please go ahead.
Hello, Jermaine and Jeannie. This is Chris in Minneapolis. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Chris.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, just some of the questions I think that I have are still, you know, being so new to the program. When I'm analyzing deals and I'm getting information from the brokers, I'm looking at things, and I think they have a couple of the properties I'm looking at, their costs and their expenses are way above the rules of thumb. And so when I'm actually putting in offers, I'm using their numbers as opposed to what the rules of thumbs are, and they're obviously that much higher. Should I be doing that, or should I bring it back down to the rule of thumb on the on our side because the cost is just so high? Maybe they're mismanaged, or is that just an assumption I should not make?
You should not make that assumption. If you're working off of actual expenses, you got to go with what they are, and you got to see the value play in raising rents, or maybe these people, you know, are charging, you know, they're not charging for utilities or for water or for things that you can correct, and that's what you might want to do: two sets of underwriting, one with what it is right now with the way they're running it, but also one with what you're going to make it, and show your investors that way.
Okay. So just run kind of two sets of underwriting,
yeah. But you've got to go with actuals. If you're working off the actuals, you can't just go back to the rule of thumb.
Unless it's lower than the rule of thumb.
If it's lower, you want to bring it up. But that's when I do two sets of underwriting.
Fair enough. And can I also have a couple of backup questions to kind of follow that?
Sure.
It seems that several of the offers that I have put in are well below, you know, the asking price, and I'm talking like maybe 60%, even like 70%. So it's starting to feel like I'm either feeling like I'm looking for the pipe dream, or I'm just in the wrong markets,
or you're working with unmotivated sellers.
Okay, fair enough.
And out there, I'll just tell you, a lot of times you'll say price to be determined. That's because the brokers don't want to put the price that the sellers want them to put on there. So they're saying price to be determined, and they're looking for best and final so that they can show these owners that they're unrealistic in their wanting this amount of money.
Okay. Yeah, and that's kind of how I felt too, and I've seen, you know, I think one that we put in for $1,050,000, that was one of the first offers you helped me with. They called me back 3 weeks later and asked if I had any room. And it wasn't the room they were looking for, of course. I didn't push that far. But and then the last question. All right, so I've got a couple offers, a couple big offers that I'm putting in. And I'm just freaking out. If one gets accepted, what do I do, right? I've got a potential of like $1 million, or I don't even know what the 1% earnest money is on a couple of these deals, is like $600,000. How do I get that into some account within 3 days of from what the offer letter states? Is that when I call you up and say, Jeannie, I'm freaking out?
Yeah, that's when you call me up, because I think you have somebody that's committed to helping you. I'm not saying it's me. It's somebody else, so they would take care of that end of it.
Okay, and I did have, I just forgot my train of thought. I was just.
That's all right.
Okay. But that does make me feel a little better. But I just, I feel like I'm really close, and I'm just kind of getting nervous, as you can tell.
Oh, I know you're gonna do it, Chris. You have the want, and that's nine tenths of the barrel, I think.
Yep. Fair enough. Oh, and by the way, Friday I'll be landing at about 11 o'clock in the morning, and I didn't know if you guys will be there till 4 or 5 in the afternoon, or if you'll be in the office
Monday
or Thursday. Yeah.
This coming Friday? Yeah, I'm going to be here all day.
Me
hey,
too.
Friday's my birthday.
All right.
We'll be here.
It's your birthday?
Yeah.
I'd
love to have you come by the office.
I don't know if I'll have time to get there before it closes, just because I'm coming from Logan, I'm not sure who's picking me up.
It's a 20-minute ride. What are you talking about?
And then what about Monday? If I can't get there by Friday, you guys going to be there Monday? Are you open?
You know what? I don't know. I got to figure that out. I don't know what the schedule. Okay. I don't know what we're doing on day before the 4th. I have no idea.
Okay.
But try for Friday.
I'll just see what how that plays out. If not, I'll try to get there Monday for sure. But anyway,
we usually have sweet Fridays here, so you're in for a treat.
All right, appreciate that. All right.
All right, Chris. Good talking to you. See you soon.
See you later, Chris.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Okay. Up next, we have Rob. Rob, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie, Rob Rosell from sunny San Diego. How are you?
Rob, I've been sending people your way. Have you been getting them?
Yes, I had one person reach out to me so far, just one. Spike?
Him, but there's a couple more. But I heard that you might be doing something with Eric.
Well, that's why I was known. Actually, that's probably not going to materialize because of the whole tick factor. I'm not positive. We're still working through those details, so I'm investigating my options. That's the reason why I had reached out to you initially.
Okay.
So if anybody other than the gentleman I just mentioned is supposed to have called me, they haven't called me yet.
Okay. Maybe they're waiting to get all the financials in check.
I got you. Okay. And that was, that was the main reason for wanting to get on this call. As you know, I'm in a 1031 situation.
Yep.
And I know you had just mentioned the Trinity, the main part of that for the syndication part of it being the 12%. And myself being in a 1031, I would much rather not partner with anybody or not be in partner with a syndication on the deal, if at all possible.
You can't.
Exactly.
You can't mix 1031 and syndication.
It gets complicated. You're right.
Well, it does because you won't be able to 1031 out when it's ready to sell. It's not allowed.
Right.
Or everybody has to put 1031 into the next deal, which you don't want that.
So my thought process in getting on the call today was, I know there's a lot of deals, a lot of students looking at deals that don't meet the Trinity because of that 12%, and on my own, I don't need, since I'm not syndicating, I don't need to be at the 12%, and thought it might be a good idea to throw it out there that if somebody's looking at a deal and it's at 10%, maybe we could work out a deal for them to wholesale me their deal.
Well, there you go. Why don't you give them your phone number? Rob has a 1031 coming up in another week, isn't it, Rob?
My property's closed in a couple of weeks, and then I've got my 45 days to name the property. So certainly time is of the essence, yes.
Yep. Okay, so maybe before you get to UP9, you'll have somebody on the hook. So give them your contact information, Rob.
Absolutely.
Awesome, Rob. So thank you. Hey, have a great weekend. Say hi to Claudia for me, and we'll see you soon.
You too, love. Have a great day.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you, Rob.
Thanks, Jermaine.
Okay, up next we have Kristen. Kristen, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Jermaine. It's Kristen McDonough, originally from Dorchester by way of San Diego.
Yeah.
How are you?
Boston
you are,
girl.
Kristen. How are you? San Diego is a much nicer place.
It's definitely warmer.
Mm-hmm.
But I just had a quick question for you guys. Budget for pool furniture. I was wondering if there was, and I know it depends on pool size, but I was wondering if there was a rule of thumb.
I don't know. that's a tricky question. I don't know. You want something sturdy that's going to stand up for years to come. But
yeah.
I think that all depends on how much money you've set aside for rehabbing the property and fixing it up. You just want to include that, but I don't know that there's a budget for furniture.
Okay. We had heard, Michael and I had heard, somewhere between 10 to 15 is sort of the norm. And then someone else came out and said 50,000. So we're just like, wait, what? And
what?
That just seems wrong.
Oh, wow.
It could
yeah,
be
it
area specific, too. It could be in an area like, Minnesota, where it snows 100% of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be area specific.
No, it's in the south, so. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess I think our number's good. I think we'll stick to it. I was just wondering if you guys had a rule of thumb on that.
No, you want something that's going to stand the test of time, though. You don't want to be replacing it every single year. So.
Right. So that's I think our range was between 10 and 20, and I think that's probably reasonable for pool furniture, 10 and 20,000.
Yeah.
It seems reasonable
good.
For me.
Me too.
Yeah. All right. Well, I didn't
All
mean
right,
to
Kristen.
Guys.
Let's hope.
Thank
you.
We'll,
yeah,
we'll
you
see you next.
Us.
We'll see you. Yeah. We'll see you next month.
Okay. We'll
All
see
right.
you then. Take
see
care.
See you guys
and
later.
Okay. Okay. Best Bye-bye. To Michael.
We will. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Up next, we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie and Jermaine, this is Mark Nelson from Somerville, Mass. How are you?
Hey, Mark.
Good to hear you again, and look forward to UP9 coming up.
Excellent.
I just have a couple of questions here. Let's look on the website for the emerging market list. Is that on there someplace, or do we get request
no.
that on a...
You can request it.
All right. I think the last one I have is about 6 months old, so we want to check out the latest one. Another question I had is we found an off-listing, off-market property, and is it typical for an off-market property to have to do a buyer's agency agreement and pay the buyer's broker fee if there's no seller listing agent involved?
No, you could work out a deal with the owner directly, unless the buyer's broker is bringing you the deal.
Yeah, well, that is the case. We approached him about another property, and then he said that he had this off-market property, so I guess that's typical then.
Yep, then you got to pay him.
Okay.
The only thing is, if he makes you sign some kind of an agreement, run it by one of us so that we can check to make sure that you're not getting stumped.
Okay.
Some of these buyers, brokers, they give you these non-competes and non-whatevers. And, they're telling you can't buy a property from anybody else for 2 years because you got to pay them a commission, even if they don't show it to you.
So yeah.
Let us look at it. We've seen a number of those.
Okay. Good. Good to know. Good to hear.
And you wouldn't pay as much to a buyer's broker for a fee as you would to a seller's fee.
Is there a typical
1-2% for buyer's broker.
Really? 1-2%. Okay. Good to know.
And a listing broker could be 3-4.
Okay. Listing 3-4. Okay. Also, I found one property down in Corpus Christi, Texas, and I'm wondering if there are any people online here that might be, if you know of anybody in Corpus Christi that might be able to take a ride by it for us to take a look. If there are any other mastery students or anybody in the program that might be able to do that.
Okay.
All right, Jenny. Well, thank you
all
so
right,
much.
All right, we'll see you next month.
Hey, yes, just we'll and Mark, real quick, before you go, Mark, and anybody else who's on the line, they did revamp the Mastery website, so they're, we still have a while to go, but a long way to go as far as finishing it. But on the competencies, the emerging market list is now on the website, and it's competency number 6, understanding market cycles, opportunities in emerging markets. So if you go to that competency, you'll find the latest emerging market list. And we're going to try to update that as soon as we get it. So.
Awesome. Awesome.
Well,
that's
there
great.
You go.
I'm really glad to hear that. Thank you so much. You both are really so much help. It's really grateful.
Good. Good. Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Have a good
weekend.
See
you next month. You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, well, I have a lot of questions from Lynn Peng from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She writes, I am a new student. I may not be able to join today's call. I have several questions I would like to ask. Number one, based on successful cases of RE Mentor students, what is the most efficient way to find deals from emerging markets that is out of state? Myself, I would go to LoopNet, pull down property packages from the market you've chosen to invest in, and then make a list of the brokers that you find up there, call them, try to find some commonality with them, and let them know that you're trying to buy a property in that location. That's my take on it.
Can I just say something real quick, Jeannie? One of the things that you'll notice and that people will notice is that whenever we do a high five, probably the most common thing that you'll hear from any student who's closed a deal is that they got the deal from a broker relationship. And that is probably, you know, like one student said, I think it was Tom Dunkel who said, you just have to smile and dial. And I use that to this day. So you just have to go out there and smile and dial and call up brokers, and that's the best way that you're going to find the properties that you need, that you're looking for. So I just want to put that 2 cents in.
Thank you, Jermaine. Okay, her second question, what is the most efficient process to analyze a deal? How long does it usually take to analyze a deal, and what is the best way to improve my skills at analyzing deals? Practice is number one. But here's what you want to do. When you're talking to the broker or the seller, you want to get actual rent rolls. Year-to-date operating expenses, profit and loss for the past 2 years. It could take an hour to go through all of that until you get proficient, and then it could take you maybe 20 minutes to go through and just bird dog to see if you even want to proceed further. I mean, if somebody sends me an analysis form, what I usually do, I first look at the income, then I look at the expenses and see what the percentage is. If the expenses are like 30% and the income's 105%, I just send it right back to them saying, this cannot be, you did not get actuals, or you've done the underwriting wrong, and I don't even look at it any further. But if I'm looking at a property for myself, That's what I go through. I go through the rent rolls. I want to see that the people that have that property, what they put down, when's the last time they renewed, have they missed any payments, those kind of things. I'm looking at that rent roll like a Bible. And then I want to see the longevity. Do they have a lot of people on month to month? Because I know that's not going to happen. It's going to change. Or do they have people that are out of lease? Are they giving away an apartment to the manager or to the maintenance man? That's a no-no. I wouldn't have that either, because what happens is the property manager gets chummy with the residents. Now she's making allowances for them to pay their rent late. Oh, it's a no-no. So, yeah, there's a lot of things when you're analyzing a property. Take your time, because the littlest thing could really upset the apple cart. And if you think it's too good to be true, then it is. So that's my take on it.
I like when you said practice, 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 Jeannie.
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
That's important.
Yep. I mean, don't analyze one deal and think that you're an expert. Go through 10 deals. Pull down just properties of all different sizes and try analyzing them to get better and better and better at it. Number three. Before I find a good deal, how do I communicate with potential investors about my multifamily property purchasing plans? What should I tell them? As a number one, create an elevator pitch. The pitch that we've been using is, we buy properties in emerging markets throughout the country with strong cash flow and value add opportunities. Would you be interested in seeing the types of deals we're working on now? So that's a way to get interest in what you're doing. And always have accredited investor forms with you so that they can fill them out. So on the number one, I wrote down a couple of things, and that was how do you find deals in emerging markets that are out of state? And I talked about going to LoopNet. I also want to give you a couple of tidbits for you to look at. So you want to go to REIS, REIS.com. That is a market and property intelligence website. They do demographics, amazing demographics. Their number is 800-366-7347. Another way is to go to the Milken Institute, M-I-L-K-E-N. They do research reports for the best performing cities, and you can go to inquiries@milkeninstitute.org for any questions that you might have regarding any property that you're looking at. I would also go to large brokerage houses such as Marcus & Millichap, C.B. Richard Ellis, and American Realty Advisors. Those there, they do demographics. They are paid for their demographics. They're amazing. Marcus & Millichap, they go up and down the whole area letting you know what new jobs are coming in, what they've done, what the redevelopment plan is. So those are great websites to go to for demographic information. And, of course, Dave's Emerging Market List. He gives you his top list and why he goes there and what are the reasons for going there and how sustainable is it. Any other questions, operator?
There are no further questions at the moment.
Okay, it's 2 o'clock. We're going to give it another minute or two, and then we will say, c'est la vie for today. So, Jermaine, do you have any email questions in?
I have no email questions, Jeannie.
Okay. So I do have one from Stu Virch, and I'm not sure I can answer it here, but I'm going to attempt it. Is there a typical partnership structure for a JV with investors that you can send me to include boilerplate typical corporate documentation. Well, I can send you all of this in an email, Stu, but boilerplate is a bad term. Boilerplate means they're taking one operating agreement and modifying it for another. We never do that. We can modify the subscription agreement and the questionnaire, but never the operating agreement, because there are specifics in there that are conducive to that one property and the way you're going to run that property. So I wouldn't attempt to do a boilerplate. But what I'd send out to you, and I'll send it to anybody that wants to email me, a property package, an operating agreement, a subscription agreement, a questionnaire, articles of organization, and a PPM. To anybody that wants to look at any of those, I'm happy to send it. My email is jeannie@rementor.com. So that's what I say, Stu, and I will send you over all of these, but don't use a boilerplate because it's different for every property in every area. Any other questions, operator?
No, Jeannie, we have no further questions at the moment.
Operator, you've been wonderful as usual.
Thank
it's
you.
9:03, and we are going to say have an awesome 4th of July weekend. Today is Jeff Lindahl's birthday, and it's also Dave's twin little girls' birthdays. So June 27th marks the first year of their birth, and we are going to celebrate that today. Take care, everybody.
And before we go, Jeannie, I just want to remind people that next week the call will not be on Tuesday. It'll be on Wednesday because the 4th is on a Tuesday. So the next call with Dave will be July 5th instead of July 4th. So everybody enjoy their 4th of July.
Have a great week. Take care. We're here if you need us. Just reach out and send us an email, jevans@rementor or jeannie@rementor, and we will answer anything you need. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Have a good one.